Can I ask you one question now?
One you can, yes.
Only one, always the same. What are you running away from?
Turn your back to the front seat.
J'ai toujours vu ça. déplaisant chez ces bêtes. Enfin, ça n'a pas été un calvaire. Je supporte.
Do you live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society?
J'aime pas les frotteurs, déjà.
Do you live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Is the networked nature of the contemporary media a characteristic feature of societies of control? Or does the current loss of faith in capitalist neoliberalism signal the societies of control are now, in fact, in crisis? Deleuze's 1990 essay Postscript on the Societies of Control is concerned with the transition from Michel Foucault's disciplinary societies to what Deleuze calls societies of control. Disciplinary societies are characterized by vast closed environments, each with their own laws, through which the individual ceaselessly passes one to the other, the family, school, barracks, factory, and, depending on circumstances, the hospital. Above all, it's the prison, however, which serves as the analogical model for the closed system of disciplinary societies. These environments or enclaves are about enclosure and confinement. Their project is to concentrate, to distribute in space, order in time, administer life. For Deleuze, disciplinary societies reached their peak at the beginning of the 20th century. His contention is that just as Foucault saw disciplinary societies as having superseded societies of sovereignty, so, in a process that has accelerated after World War II, social organization today has now ceased to be disciplinary. So much so that all the closed set spaces associated with disciplinary societies are in crisis. The family is in crisis, the health service is in crisis, the factory system is in crisis. All of which appears quite recognisable today, of course. What's even more interesting, as far as the contemporary situation is concerned, is that all attempts by government to reform the confined environments of the disciplinary societies are in vain. No matter how long these bounded spaces may linger, no matter how long their death throes may be, ultimately they are finished for Deleuze. Disciplinary societies are supposedly in the process of being replaced by societies of control. The latter are our immediate future, according to Deleuze in this essay, and Foucault, if Deleuze is to be believed, and contain extremely rapid, free-floating forms of continuous control and instant communication that operate in environments and spaces that are much more open. As a result, whereas the enclaves of disciplinary societies are like different moulds or castings which shape individuals, the mechanisms of the societies of control are a modulation like a self-deforming cast that will continuously change from one moment to the other. Instead of the prison or factory of disciplinary societies, we now have the corporation, which is likened to a spirit, a gas. Deleuze puts it like this: The factory constituted individuals as a single body to the double advantage of the boss who surveyed each element within the mass and the unions who mobilized a mass resistance. But the corporation constantly presents the brashest rivalry as a healthy form of emulation, an excellent motivational force that opposes individuals against one another and runs through each, dividing each within.
This is Barry.
Yes, I'm still on hold.
And what was this?
I'm looking at your advertisement for the airline promotion and giveaway.
Ah, this is our frequent flyer plan.
Yeah, it's hard to understand because it says in addition to, but I can't exactly understand in addition to what because there's actually nothing to add it to.
I think that's a typo then.
Okay, so just to clarify, I'm sorry. 10 purchases of any of your Healthy Choice products equals 500 miles, and with the coupon, the same purchases would value 1,000 miles?
That's it.
Well, do you realize that the monetary value of this promotion and the prize is potentially worth more than the purchases?
Do you live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society?
Can I ask you your extension and your name, possibly?
It's extension 215.
The name is Carter.
Thank you very much, Carter.
Bye, mate. This is Barry.
This is Barry.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, is this your first time calling?
Yes, it is.
Can I have your credit card number followed by the expiration date?
Sure. How much is this anyways?
It's $2.99 per minute for the first half hour and $1.99 per minute after that.
Okay, and it's confidential?
Information I give
you,
it's private, confidential?
Of course, yeah. Would you like to talk to a girl? I can connect you with a beautiful girl if I can just have your credit card number followed by the expiration date.
Sure. 5102-8117-6554. Expiration 0504. 1274.
And the name is that appears on the card.
Sherman Oaks, California, apartment 4, 914-03.
And your name?
Barry Egan.
And your social security number?
44.
It's just for verification through the credit card company.
Do we live and this is confidential.
It's just going to verify society. Your credit card information. It's completely confidential and it appears on your credit card as D&D Mattress Man.
Very good. 91. I'm sorry. 917.
Okay.
65. 5012.
Okay, so hang on, Barry, all right?
Thank you very much. I'm sorry. 917.
Do you look in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society?
5012.
Can I have a telephone number area code first so I can call you back?
Could you possibly just connect me to one of the girls?
Well, it's a callback service. The girl will call you back.
Okay. I just was calling to speak with one of the girls. I thought that's how it worked. I'm 818.
Okay.
775.
Mm-hmm.
818-3993.
Okay.
775.
Okay, and what kind of a girl would you like to talk to?
3993. No, it's me, though. I don't want them to know my name, okay?
Okay. Nobody will know your name.
775. Okay, if you could tell my name is Jack.
You want to call you Jack?
Sure, I just don't want her to know it's me.
Okay, that's
Thank
fine,
you.
Jack.
I'm sorry.
No problem. So we'll call you right back, okay?
Terrific.
What's more, this is the case not just with regard to the corporation, but also the school and the university, we'd argue. Here, too, perpetual training reigns via the introduction of an audit culture, evaluation forms, performance-related pay, and other forms of never-ending monitoring and micromanagement, with continuous control, for which we can read continuous assessment, training, and staff development, replacing the examination. In a control-based system, nothing is left alone for long, Deleuze maintains elsewhere. Like the school, according to Deleuze then, The university has been handed over to the corporation. It's becoming less and less a closed site differentiated from the workspace as another closed site. That said, it's not a matter of one form of society being more powerful than the other, disciplinary as opposed to control societies, both types containing liberating and enslaving forces that confront one another. So there's no need to fear or hope for Deleuze, only to look for new weapons. Although written in 1990, Deleuze's essay seems surprisingly topical and current today. Nowhere more so, perhaps, than when he describes the transition from the capitalism of the past to that of the present. It's worth quoting him at length on this point. 19th century capitalism is a capitalism of concentration for production and for property. It therefore erects a factory as a space of enclosure, the capitalist being the owner of the means of production, but also progressively the owner of the other spaces conceived through analogy, the worker's familial house, the school. As for markets, they are conquered sometimes by specialization, sometimes by colonization, sometimes by lowering the cost of production. But in the present situation, capitalism is no longer involved in production, which it often relegates to the third world. It's a capitalism of higher order production. It no longer buys raw materials and no longer sells the finished products. It buys the finished products or assembles parts. What it wants to sell is services, but what it wants to buy is stocks. This is no longer a capitalism for production, but for the product, which is to say, for being sold or marketed. Thus, it is essentially dispersive, and the factory has given way to the corporation. The family, the school, the army, the factory are no longer the distinct analogical spaces that converge towards an owner, state or private power, but coded figures, deformable and transformable, of a single corporation that now has only stockholders. The conquests of the market are made by grabbing control and no longer by disciplinary training. Corruption thereby gains a new power. Marketing has become the center of the soul of the corporation. We are taught that corporations have a soul, which is the most terrifying news in the world. The operation of markets is now the instrument of social control and forms the impudent breed of our masters. Control is short-term and of rapid rates of turnover, but also continuous and without limit, while discipline was of long duration, infinite and discontinuous. Man is no longer man enclosed, but man in debt. With this, Deleuze's postscript on the societies of control appears to announce not just the fate of the corporation and with it the university, it also anticipates the current credit crunch and global financial crisis, a crisis of belief in the promise of capital, a fall from capitalism to creditalism. As well as events such as the recent protests outside British factories against the import of foreign workers from Europe. Is the current financial crisis a symptom of the crisis of disciplinary societies? Or is it the operation of the markets, and hence, since the markets are now the instrument of control, the societies of control themselves that are in crisis? And if it's the control societies that are in crisis, could we follow Deleuze's lead and try to predict what form of society is going to come after the societies of control? Would this be an interesting and useful thing to do?
Une petite garance illustrée à Deleuze, qui s'écrit aussi avec un D. Alors il y a Deleuze, Gilles, philosophe français. français, né à Paris en 1925. Avec Félix Guattari, il montre l'importance du désir et son aspect révolutionnaire face à toute institution, même psychanalytique. Et y mettre, comme œuvre démontrant tout cela, l'antiédipe en 72. Alors justement, puisque tu passes aux yeux de tous pour le philosophe du désir, je voudrais qu'on parle du désir. Alors le désir, c'était quoi exactement? Prenons la question le plus simplement du monde, quand l'antiédipe...
C'était pas ce qu'on a cru, en tout cas. Je suis sûr, c'est pas ce qu'on a cru, même à ce moment-là, même, je veux dire, les gens les plus charmants qui étaient... Ça a été une grande ambiguïté, ça a été un grand malentendu, quoi, un petit malentendu. Je crois qu'on voulait dire une chose, mais vraiment très simple. Si on avait bien une grande ambition, à savoir que jusqu'à celui, quand on fait un livre, c'est qu'on prétend dire quelque chose de nouveau. On prétendait que d'une manière ou d'une autre, les gens avant nous, ils n'avaient pas bien compris ce que c'était que le désir, c'est-à-dire... On faisait notre tâche de philosophe, on prétendait proposer un nouveau concept de désir. Mais dans les concepts, il ne faut pas croire que... faut pas que les gens, quand ils ne font pas de philosophie, croient que c'est très abstrait un concept. Au contraire, ça renvoie à des choses extrêmement simples, extrêmement concrètes. Ça, on le verra, c'est... presque ça renvoie à... Il n'y a pas de concept philosophique qui nous renvoie à des déterminations non philosophique, c'est très simple, c'est très très concrète. On voulait dire la chose la plus simple du monde. On voulait dire, jusqu'à maintenant, vous parlez abstraitement du désir parce que vous extrayez un objet supposé être l'objet de votre désir. Alors vous pouvez dire, je désire une femme. Je désire partir, faire tel voyage. Je désire ceci, cela.
Well, let me begin by referring to something that I've already discussed. That is, if it is correct, as I believe it is, that a fundamental element of human nature is the need for creative work, for creative inquiry, for free creation without the arbitrary limiting effect of the course of institutions, then of course it will follow that a decent society should maximize the possibilities for this fundamental human characteristic to be realized. That means trying to overcome the elements of repression and oppression and destruction and coercion that exist in any existing society, ours for example, as a historical residue. Now, a federated, decentralized system of free associations incorporating economic as well as social institutions would be what I refer to as anarcho-syndicalism, and it seems to me that it is the appropriate form of social organization for an advanced technological society in which human beings do not form of social organization forced into position for an advanced technological society in which human beings do creative not urge the forced into position of tools that I think is intrinsic to human nature will in fact be able to realize itself in whatever way it will. I don't know all the ways in which it will.
Je suis dans ma démarche
for an advanced technological society
avancé, je vais beaucoup
in which human
loin
beings do not have to be
c'est-à-dire
forced
que
into position
j'avoue,
of tools of cogs and
n'être
machine.
Pas capable de définir ni à plus forte raison de proposer un modèle de fonctionnement social idéal pour notre société scientifique ou technologique. En revanche, une des tâches qui me paraît urgente, immédiate, avant même toute autre chose, c'est celle-ci. On a l'habitude, du moins dans notre société européenne, de considérer que le pouvoir, il est localisé entre les mains du gouvernement Et il s'exerce à préfecture par un certain nombre d'institutions, d'administrations, la police, l'armée, l'administration, toutes ces institutions-là sont en fait pour transmettre les ordres, les faire appliquer, l'armée punir les gens qui n'obéissent pas. Sont en fait pour transmettre les ordres, les faire appliquer, il s'exerce encore les gens qui n'obéissent pas.
En outre. Mais je
de
crois
plus que le
par l'intermédiaire d'un certain nombre d'institutions qui ont l'air comme
en
ça,
outre de n'avoir de rien plus, de
par l'intermédiaire d'un certain nombre
qui ont l'air d'en être indépendants
qui ont l'air comme le ça,
pas de n'avoir rien.
On sait bien que l'université avec le pouvoir
d'une façon générale
qui ont l'air d'en être indépendants
scolaire, qui ne le sont pas.
En apparence,
on sait bien que l'université
est fait simplement pour distribuer
d'une façon générale,
on sait tout le système scolaire
est fait
qui, en apparence,
est fait simplement pour distribuer
le savoir,
une certaine classe sociale,
que cet appareil scolaire
exclut les instruments du pouvoir,
maintenir au pouvoir
toute une autre classe,
une certaine
sociale.
Classe sociale.
Et quelque chose comme la psychiatrie,
quelque chose
qui en apparence aussi n'est destiné qu'au bien de l'humanité,
quelque chose comme la psychiatrie,
qui en apparence aussi
n'est destiné qu'au bien de l'humanité,
un pouvoir
et à la connaissance des sûrs,
la justice est encore d'une certaine manière,
il me semble
que la tâche politique
sur
dans une société,
la justice,
la justice,
le cri, il me semble,
le jeu. Des institutions apparemment les plus
actuelles
dans une société
critiquée,
l'attaquer,
le critiquer,
le jeu des institutions
apparemment
les plus actuelles
qui s'exercent,
obscurément
en eux,
de telle manière
surgissent
que
la violence
politique
à s'exercer
tout de suite, obscurément
en eux,
à surgir
le pour qu'on puisse
la pérennité de la société,
à vouloir
toutes choses
à voir,
on jette
la critique,
à donner
la violence
politique,
la force
de la société
future,
sans avoir
jeté
la critique,
même à travers
des violences
aussi nobles,
apparemment aussi pures que celles-ci,
de les laisser se reconstituer,
même à travers des formes aussi nobles, apparemment aussi pures que celles du syndicalisme anarchiste.
Yes, I would certainly agree with that, not only in theory, but also in action. That is, there are two intellectual tasks, one and the one which I was discussing, to try to create the vision of a future just society. Another task is to understand very clearly the nature of power and oppression and terror and destruction in our own society. And that certainly includes the institutions you mentioned, as well as the central institutions of any industrial society, namely the economic, commercial, and financial institutions, in particular, in the coming period, the great multinational corporations, which are not very far from us physically tonight. Those are the basic institutions of oppression and coercion and autocratic rule that appear to be neutral. After all, they say, well, we're subject to the democracy of the marketplace. Still, I think it would be a great shame to lose or to put aside entirely the somewhat more abstract and philosophical, if you like, task of trying to draw the connection between a concept of human nature that gives full scope to freedom and dignity and other fundamental human characteristics, and relates that to some notion of social structure in which
do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? Do we live in what the philosopher Gilles Deleuze calls a control society? In a recent lecture in London, the philosopher Bernard Stiegler appeared to be attempting just something of this kind. He suggested that we're faced by two possible future scenarios. Either control intensifies in the sense explained by Deleuze, or industrial capitalism passes from the consumerist economy of the societies of control to what Stiegler calls an economy of contribution. Yet this analysis only begs a host of further questions. Can these two economies,
the consumer economy, and the economy of contribution be so easily opposed as Stiegler seems to imply? Can even disciplinary societies and the societies of control be so easily contrasted? Didn't forms of what Deleuze refers to as control exist in disciplinary societies and vice versa? Are the institutions of the disciplinary society really finished? Everywhere? Isn't this too linear and straightforward a model of development? Don't some societies in other spaces and places around the world still rely on the deployment of disciplinary technologies of power and production and so on? Presumably, these are the very third world countries Deleuze argues control societies have outsourced their production to. And if that's so, doesn't control rely on and support a disciplinary and disciplined other? Don't even some aspects of our own society still rely on disciplinary technologies? Not least the prison system. Surely the deterrent of incarceration relies on its break from the more quotidian flow of controlling forces in our lives. It relies upon its distinctive disciplinary powers. Coming back to Stiegler's idea of an economy of contribution, the thought also occurs that if people are to have their contributions to this new economy acknowledged, so they know they have contributed, as he insists, then surely this would still be part of a conventional economy of debt and exchange, in which case it wouldn't be a particularly new or different form of economy at all. There's certainly nothing particularly new about the way one feature of society, in Stiegler's case, the degree of participation that is perceived as being afforded by much contemporary computer-aided communication, is being singled out here. Privileged and then used to provide an explanation of the nature of society as such. Although the particular machinic metaphor that is being drawn on may be different, for Stiegler it's the kind of contribution commonly associated with the digital culture of Web 2.0, rather than anything to do with the clock, steam, engine, or petrol motor, say. This way of conceptually modelling the world, using the dominant machinic metaphors of a given era, is quite an old one now. One conceptual metaphor may have been replaced with another, but the relation between that metaphor and the conceptual model of the world is much the same. There's nothing that's really all that different here as far as the structure of analysis is concerned. The meaning of the world is still being read off the dominant mode of technology in a given era, with each kind of society corresponding to a particular kind of machine, as Deleuze has it in Control and Becoming. Now, in this interview with Negri, Deleuze acknowledges that machines don't explain anything. You have to analyse the collective arrangements of which the machines are just one component, albeit an apparently privileged one. Still, it's noticeable that on this evidence, both of these theorists, Deleuze and Stiegler, seem to be extremely confident in their ability to access these collective arrangements. The nature of social reality may have changed, to the extent that it can now be said to be based more around the kind of production associated with control societies and their enterprises, as Maurizio Lazzarato calls them, than it is with the factories of Fordism, modernism, and disciplinary societies. But on this evidence, the ability of philosophers or social theorists to access and analyse this reality clearly has not undergone anything like such a profound transformation. Does all this point us towards something that, in different ways, can be said to be a feature of both Stiegler's talk and Deleuze's text? For even though Greg Sedgeworth positions the current Deleuzian boom in cultural studies and cultural theory in terms of a certain collective exhaustion of post-structuralist trajectories, isn't there something that is actually rather structuralist about the analysis of both Stiegler and Deleuze here? Witness their apparent interest in uncovering the underlying system of things and bringing to light and rendering visible the structural principles, arrangements, and relationships at the heart of society, as it were. Witness too the reliance of both of these thinkers on what appear to be rather simple sets of structuring binaries, consumption versus contribution, discipline versus control, factory versus corporation, body versus gas, machine versus computer, not to mention the grand narratives of almost linear historical development and progression they appear to provide. Without doubt, there is something very persuasive and seductive about all this, but there is also something reductive about it as well. In their use of grand narratives and machinic metaphors, could analysis of this kind not be said to tell us almost as much, if not more, about the will to power and knowledge of their authors and those who follow in their footsteps and attempt to build on their foundations, as they do contemporary societies?
Can we apply Genesis' concept of society of control in that kind of sites?
Well, I think you're right that, in effect, our people have already made the argument that, the move to society, the move from a kind of perspective surveillance, right, and a kind of panopticon where we have one central entity, kind of government, the powers which are observing everybody, and then your dream is to kind of really become invisible and to preserve your privacy, right, to a place which everybody kind of, not everybody, but there's a lot of people choose to expose themselves, and when everybody is watching everybody else, but actually, as opposed to hiding and becoming visible, people enjoy kind of putting themselves on display. But of course, we have to remember two things. First of all, not everybody is doing it. I mean, it's only a certain number of people who do it. And in fact, there are obviously some social and age factors. So not everybody has a blog, and not everybody puts a kind of confessional videos online. So that's number one. In terms of society of control, I'm happy to come back to it in the next question, because to me it's really about something else. I'd like to connect the idea of society of control to the idea of data mining. The fact that what also happened in this decade, and I don't think I'll be dealing with this development in this book, but it's something I'm thinking about and hoping to write about soon.
So what is data mining?
Data mining. So data mining basically comes from statistics, but it's the idea of using kind of mathematical and computer techniques to analyze large amounts of data to find some interesting patterns, relationships, or to see something you can't simply see with your own eyes. So what happens is, let's say, towards the beginning of this decade, for different reasons, our societies accumulating large collections of data, right? So companies which give credit cards, have all this data on, how people, what people buy and how the, their financial patterns, right? And if you go in America, like in a supermarket, we give you also special discount cards. So this way we can keep track of everything you're buying every time you go to the supermarket. And scientists, accumulating large amounts of data because we do scientific experiments and we have various sensors which are connected to computers. And then, of course, after 9/11, in America, they start analyzing, the Department of Homeland Security starts analyzing, telephone records of people. So the idea is that because more and more of our kind of social and scientific and technological experiences, are being recorded by electronic individual devices, or these experiences take place through electronic individual devices. It's pretty easy to record kind of data. So you can accumulate large amounts of data, and then you can start analyzing this data in various mathematical statistical methods to extract different patterns. Everybody is doing it, right? Financial companies are doing it. Companies which sell things are doing it. Military is doing it. Scientists are doing it. And of course, the so-called social media companies are also doing it, right? So, we take the data about sort of people's behavior online, what we're doing, and then maybe sell it to some of our companies. So as a result, some people say that our society has moved from being centered on computation being centered on data, right? Where people realize that your data is the most important asset, the most valuable thing your company or institution can have, and this is what people, guard very carefully, and then, they're trying to kind of turn this data into money. So I think there's a kind of, you know, there's an interesting, maybe if you think about Foucault, right, there's maybe interesting connection here. Because what the society, right, is doing is it's not simply looking at you to make sure that you behave properly, but it's actually, and it doesn't simply want you to confirm, right, particular patterns of behavior. It's basically saying, well, you know, you can do whatever you want, right? You can do whatever you want. What we want to do is we want to follow your behavior, like we want to record everything which you're doing and analyze it. So then we can sell you stuff, or maybe arrest you, you know, if you're not doing something properly. I mean, I'll give you just one last example of data mining. Yes. So in a classical kind of surveillance situation, right, with, you know, with surveillance, video surveillance of the 80s and 90s, you have video cameras, and these video cameras, you know, maybe people are looking at these video cameras. Sometimes you have, you know, computer algorithms. But let's say somebody has a camera in their home, there's a very simple algorithm, right? You know, okay, if somebody enters the room or somebody, you know, crosses the yard, you know, the camera is going to send the alert. So the idea that, okay, there is an event, there is no event, right? So something happened or something didn't happen, on or off. Whereas with a kind of more data mining approach, like, for example, you have cameras now at different airports, and, you know, they're not simply looking for particular events. They say they are simply looking for something which is anomaly, right? Something which is unusual. Let's say a person is going on the elevator, but in the opposite direction, right? So, like, you know, how do you know that something happened which is unusual? Well, you analyze lots and lots and lots of data of video recordings of, you know, all kinds of events, and then what you do is you said, I don't know what I'm looking for, right? But if I find something unusual, I'm going to alert the human operator, right? So to me, that's a perfect example of kind of data mining, where you don't know, you know, you don't, with surveillance, you know, or with panopticon, and maybe even with controlled society, you know exactly what it is you want to find, right? You know exactly what's good and what's not good, right? Whereas here, you say, I'm simply looking for a pattern, right? I'm looking for a trend. I'm looking for something unusual, something which I don't know beforehand.
So we may say that we don't live in the society of punishment, like Scott said, or the society of control, like the last, that we live in the society of data.
Yeah, well, I don't have some nice, you know, some nice sounding term for it. And I mean, I don't think it means that other types of society disappeared. I mean, I think we do have, you know, the panopticon society, and we do have control society. But, you know, if you go to Singapore, you know, it's a perfect panopticon society, you know, because you have cameras everywhere, and the cameras deliberately are made to be very, very big, right? You know, the camera is like, you know, you go to the metro, and the camera, you know, can be mounted on the kind of arm, and the arm can be like two meters long. And that's why, you know, nobody is really misbehaving, because people know what they've been watched. So you don't need, if you never ever see policemen in Singapore, you know, there are cameras everywhere, so people just start behaving, you know, exactly like Foucault said. So you have also the structures, but, you know, it's simply like a new layer, right? So I would say the data mining is a kind of new layer that has been added to our structures of contemporary society.
Okay. Tu zdaj mi se taj projekt Spektar pač v nekem smislu pač, postavlja pač središče pač nek problem kontrole oziroma nadzora. S kaj sem se z Levom Manovićem na enim intervju pogovarjal, ne, pa sem recimo rekel, da Foucault govori pač o družbi nadzora, ne, pa o Deleuze o družbi kontrole. Ne, pa sem bil vprašal, kaj zdaj recimo taj Facebook, to je pa neki izvrnjeni panoptikom, ne, kaj ni več pač zapornikov, ampak smo svi neki čuvaji, neki gledajo eni druge. Ne? Pa je on rekel, da pač tako družba kontrole pa družba nadzora obstajajo, ne? Ampak da on misli, da zdaj obstaja še en layer, ki je kao data mining, ne? Se pravi, rudarenje podatkov je bil nekako slovenščini, se pravi, en layer nadzora oziroma kontrole, kjer se iz velike količine podatkov, kar je omogočeno s sodobnimi tehnologijami, pač selekcionira
tisto, kar je nekoga zanima.
Ja, da je to zdaj en novi layer, ne?
Mislim, ja, to je velika industrija zdaj tudi, ne? Mislim, data mining je verjetno ena izmed najbolj propulzivnih industrij, kar se tiče informacijsko-telekomunikacijskih pač, procesov. Na tem so ogromno dela, Google je najbolj tak
kralj data mining.
Kralj data mininga, pač najbolj tako očiten primer, ampak imaš dosti specializiranih družb, ki se ukvarjajo samo s tem, da pač dejansko podatke zbirajo, minajo. Imaš firme, ki se ukvarjajo samo z data miningom, recimo patente. Ne? In skrbijo za to, da se ve, kdaj kateri patent poteče, da se lahko tiste tehnologije potem uporabljajo, kopirajo, brez da bi se vključevali in tako da je ogromno. Data mining je ja, zelo pomemben layer, verjetno najbolj, ne, ker je tudi najbolj obskuren in neviden. Države se tega zavedajo in če pogledajo danes, kako smo v bistvu vpeti v neko digitalno identiteto skozi vse računalniške sisteme preko teh identifikatorjev, kakšna so davčna številka ali pa EMŠO, pač biti, pa nas imamo dve te številke, ne, ki sta v Sloveniji. Ko te podatke koreliraš, pa daš še bančni račun zraven, imaš za eno zelo lepo sliko tega v prihodnosti. Jaz že vem za par projektov v Sloveniji, ki se že ukvarjajo s tem, da bodo pač opazovali, kako vozimo in glede tega, kako vozimo, boš pač tudi višina tvojega zavarovanja določena in tako naprej. Tako da tle je na žalost na nek način teh sistemov nadzora možnih ogromno. Mobilna telefonija je pa itak en tak primer.
Misliš, da je možna opcija, da v prihodnosti recimo tudi na internetu imamo en ID oziroma ena identiteta, pa da ti on gleda kot vozniško dovoljenje, ki ti gleda?
Pa se jo že imaš, to je IP številka tvojega računalnika oziroma pač ta koda ki, komunikacijske kartice, ki je v tvojem kompjuterju. To je unique identifier tega hardware. Ne? Na networku.
Je samo varianta, da tudi pogrem, recimo pogodno se stavi za drugega računalnika, da se bo moral identificirati nekaj računalnika.
No. Mislim, želja je gotovo, da gre v to smer. Če pogledaš Google Mail ali pa Google pač naslov, ki ga ima zelo dosti ljudi, oziroma vsak, mislim, jaz ga tudi imam enega, če je eno zbog mnogih identitet, ne, ampak. Je seveda Google je en tak unifier, ne, ampak, ja, vsi ti mail provideri zastonski so zgrejeni v tem recimo poslovnem modelu, pač popolnega obvladovanja enega subjekta, spravi en identifier za to, da lahko kupuješ preko interneta, ne, da ima čekaj mail, documents,
in this respect, it's a relatively easy matter, perhaps too easy, to come up with explanations as to why a text such as PostScript on the societies of control has been taken up and used so readily within the social sciences and social theory especially. It meets a need for large explanations of contemporary societies, the workings of which can otherwise often appear too ambiguous, complex, and difficult to grasp. Explanations that have an added advantage in that they can also be contrasted to previous structuralist, post or otherwise, theories, thus helping the user to feel as if they are, indeed, very much at the cutting edge of some fashionable, new Deleuzean paradigm. Or is such an explanation itself too simplistic and reductive in turn? Take the way Deleuze, with his comments about a continuous network, about codes that mark access to information and reject it, and about surfing, has frequently been drawn upon to say something about the internet and the network nature of contemporary society. That the internet is a characteristic feature of societies of control. For Deleuze, whereas the old societies of sovereignty made use of simple machines, levers, pulleys, clocks, the societies of control operate with machines of a third type, computers. In this sense, it would be a fairly simple matter to position the ink on paper codex book as belonging to disciplinary societies,
In the disciplinary societies, one was always starting again, from book to book to book. Our liquid book would then presumably belong to societies of control, with their continuous variation without limit. After all, one can finish a codex book and start a new one, but one can never finish a liquid book, neither in terms of reading it nor writing it. Rather, it too is part of a continuous network, the corporation, the educational system, the armed services being metastable states coexisting in one and the same modulation, like a universal system of deformation. Nor does this necessarily have to be a negative thing, for how does one combat the gaseous or liquid nature of the corporation or university in the societies of control? Is political struggle now to be conducted with forms of resistance that are fixed and solid, or should the gaseous enterprise be combated with new forms of resistance, creativity and struggle for the simile spirit, gas or liquid life in nature, more tactical than strategic, and which are therefore likewise subject to continuous change and modulation? If so, how is such an emphasis on creating and on being open to the new and unexpected to be distinguished from neoliberal capitalism's emphasis on continual innovation and creativity? It's here that questions of ethics and politics come into play. It's where we would argue we are required to make responsible ethical and political decisions in specific, albeit undecidable, situations and circumstances. After all, creativity is not inherently political or ethical at all. Some forms of creativity are more ethical or political than others, depending on the particular situation and context. In this respect, given our concern with raising questions for notions of intellectual property, copyright and so forth with the Liquid Book Project, it's interesting that while Deleuze spends very little time in this essay investigating precisely what the new weapons we would use against the control societies are, of the two, he does mention computer piracy as one, the other being introduction of viruses. Nevertheless, Deleuze was writing pre the World Wide Web as we currently know and understand it. So is there a question mark concerning the extent to which Deleuze is actually able to tell us something about the web? Might the web not have followed a line of flight away from the concept of control in the intervening years? Is there a danger that using this concept to interpret the web will not only run counter to Deleuze's emphasis on creativity and experimentation, as opposed to representation, by saying, this is that, but will in effect result in an attempt to discipline the web in order to make it more like Deleuze's philosophy, as when people talk about digital media with its binary code allowing the modulation of a fixed structural grid that might never be finally escaped? After all, if the web is today still as Deleuze described things in this essay, then there can have been precious little actual modulation or continuous change since 1990. Or is that the point, that there has been change and modulation, but it's within a fixed structural grid? And how appropriate is the concept of control when it comes to thinking about the web anyway? What about the question Mark Poster raises in his essay on Who Controls Digital Culture? Can digital culture actually be controlled in the conventional sense? Isn't the very term control a rather awkward one to use in this context? Isn't it too much of a feature of forms of society that existed before those of control Deleuze is referring to? Certainly, one of the things that is both interesting and surprising about a lot of Deleuze's writing, and it's a feature of this essay on control societies, is its vagueness and the lack of subtlety in some of the ideas and language, or should that be openness? For example, we know this is part and parcel of Deleuze being creative, that it's about experiencing and experimenting rather than interpreting. You know, in science, one speaks of a control group and an experimental group, the latter only being possible because of its relation to the former. So there's clearly a link here between control and experiment. But it's interesting that so many responses to Deleuze's postscript on the societies of control do seem to attempt to represent or interpret it, say, this means that, rather than experiment with it Now, the generous response would, of course, be to say that this occurs because such interpretations are part of the very system of control and interpretation Deleuze is trying to combat, perhaps using this essay as some form of modest weapon. But one last question that remains concerns Deleuze's own responsibility in all this. Is there a case to be made that it's too easy for texts such as Postscript on the Society of Self-Control to be picked up and adopted in rather unsubtle and uninteresting ways? Or is this, in fact, one of the reasons Deleuze's essay has proved so influential?
C'est à zéro. C'est, sauf quelques cas très rares, parce que Spinoza est dans mon cœur. Alors lui, je n'oublie pas, c'est mon cœur, c'est pas ma tête. Mais sinon, pourquoi j'admire pas cette culture différente? C'est les gens qui parlent.
C'est de l'érudition ou c'est l'opinion sur tous les sujets?
Non, c'est pas de l'érudition. C'est, ils savent en parler. Ils ont d'abord voyagé. Ils ont voyagé dans l'histoire, dans la géographie. Ouh. Ils savaient pas parler de tout. Moi, j'ai entendu à la télé, c'est effarant, j'ai entendu des dons. Alors, comme je suis plein d'admiration, je peux même dire, des gens comme...
Can I ask you one question?
Umberto Eco, c'est prodigieux.
Yes.
Only one.
Disent,
bon, always the same.
Ça y est, c'est comme si on appuyait sur...
What are you running with?
Je le sais, en plus, c'est pas du tout.
Turn your back to the front seat.
Can I ask you one question now?
One you can? Yes.
Only one. Always the same. What are you running away from?
Turn your back to the front seat.